Okay, my name is Sergio Demian Lerner, and I'm an Ethereum fan and Ethereum part of the Ethereum community since its beginning, when I did the first security audits of the Ethereum code and design. And currently, I work for a company called Airscale Labs, which is developing an Ethereum-compatible sidechain to Bitcoin. But today's talk is about a research I did a couple of years ago that applies both to Ethereum and to Airscale and to any other blockchain platform. So the talk's name is The Blockchain Virus. Can a blockchain pay to replicate? Can a blockchain itself pay for all the resources it needs to survive, like an organism? Or it could have been called How to Reward Full Nodes. Or it could have been called How to Create a Reward-Based Peer-to-Peer File Sharing System controlled entirely by smart contracts, by no additional blockchain, okay? So first of all, I'm gonna talk a little bit about decentralization, because we wouldn't be here if not because we appreciate decentralization. And any attempt to build a cryptocurrency or smart contract platform in the past that was centralized just failed. Okay, so this is what we must stand, this is what we must try to keep. So why is decentralization so important? Well, it brings back the power to the people. So this means a lot of things like people being able to audit their payments, disintermediation, having open access, no central control, no monopolies, no central point of failure, and of course, censorship resistance and corruption resistance. These are very, very important properties of our networks. So how do we promote decentralization? Well, first we have to identify, measure it, and then we can see how can we improve it. So one of the ways is increasing the number of independent implementation developers, full nodes, okay? And another way is by reducing the cost of running a full node. Because as the network scales, the cost of running a full node increases. So if I have to depend on a third party to know about my transactions, then the network is going to be centralized. And last, the actual full node topology is very important. If I take a node out and then the networks disrupt or disconnect, then of course this is not a good decentralized network. But we can see that in all kind of ways that we can improve decentralization, it's very, very important to have full nodes. We cannot live without full nodes and have decentralization. So what is a full node anyway? Okay, a full node does a lot of services to the network. It broadcasts blocks, transactions. It also hides the node's IP, so we don't give an attacker the possibility to gather all information about the network and do partition attacks or denial of service attacks. Also, a node provides filtering services for light clients. And of course, the most important function, it has a copy of the state and the blockchain to serve to new nodes that want to bootstrap and, you know, sync with the network. But what are the incentives to run a full node currently? There are none, okay? So currently it's quite cheap, so we do it, but in the future we don't know. So anything we can do to reward full nodes will foster decentralization. So how can we do this? Well, there are very simple ways, but most of them do not work. For instance, we can create peer-to-peer pay services, like creating a micro channel from one node to a peer, then I can easily, or a probabilistic payment, which also works, and then I can just ask for a block, and then you give me the block, I make you a very small micropayment. Well, the problem with this setup is, of course, that we can have proxy nodes, and proxy nodes can, you know, charge a little more and just forward the request to another node. And so they just are there to, you know, to they don't know contribute to decentralization, it just make the network more expensive. Some other cryptocurrencies, some other networks rely on something called master node. Of course, this master node regularly ping nodes so they can vote so which nodes have to be rewarded. This, of course, It has a lot of problems with centralization. These nodes are centralized. And also, these nodes gather a lot of information about the IPs of the nodes, which is something we want to avoid. So I will present a third way of doing this. And the interesting thing is that this is a communication between smart contracts and full nodes without any other user or external system intervention. So basically, there is a smart contract that will say something like this. Give me a proof of work that proves with high probability that you store in your own hard disk a copy of the blockchain, okay? Or that you are so irrational that you are willing to buy a lot of hardware just to fake this proof, but you will spend more money than just buying the hard disk to store the file, okay? And I will tell you if nobody else finds that you have cheated. So if the full node A submits a proof in transaction data, then another full node can come and say, no, this proof is fake, and the smart contract can evaluate this proof. This proof must be able to be evaluated with very low amount of gas and can keep a predeposit, A's predeposit, and reward B for providing that useful information. So to summarize, we want a node to be able to prove to all remaining nodes in the network that it is storing the blockchain. Okay, so the benefits are obvious. We can detect proxy nodes. We won't pay proxy nodes. And we don't require any special change to the network for the nodes that don't want to participate. And maybe the drawback is that we are not actually proving we are serving the blockchain. We are proving we have a copy of the blockchain. But since we have a copy of the blockchain, we are in sync with the network, almost sure we are serving it. And the cost of serving it will be small. So to manage to do it, we need some cryptographic protocols, okay? So these are the previous attempts to do this kind of thing. So we have provable data possession, which allows you a verifier to send some data to a server and then challenge the server to see if this data is still there. Also, we have proof of retrievability, where the same verifier can also have certain assurance that it will be able to recover this information in the future. These two are called proof of storage. So I will present a protocol, a very simple protocol, which is called proof of unique blockchain storage, that it's a proof of storage scheme, but also allows you to ensure that the other party, the server, has an actual copy of this file. Okay, so this means that this file will be related to some identity. Okay, so the same file cannot be related to two identities. So it's interesting that this year Filecoin presented a very similar proof that they call proof of replication that I also published a couple of years ago. And it's kind of the same idea, but it's worse. And I will tell you later why it has many problems. So in a nutshell, we take the file we want to prove possession, and we will encode it together with an identity. And this identity will be generally your node address, your Ethereum address or RSK address. So what we need is that the coding is fast, but it should only be fast enough, you know, for not to interfere with your network operations. On the contrary, appending and updating will be a much slower operation. But again, not slow enough to interfere with operations. The property is that when you encode a file and you encode a second file, there is nothing to share in these encodings. So the server will engage in a challenge response protocol with a verifier, and he will use the encoded data, not the undecoded data, but just the encoded data. And it must be irrational from the economic point of view to do anything else, like relay to another party, or like having a supercomputer, or whatever. So this is how the peer-to-peer protocol goes without smart contracts. So there is a honest verifier say, give me the hash of n pseudo-randomly selected blocks of the file and that have been encoded with your node address. And please do it in less than 1 second. So the honest prover has the information, just put the information to memory and hash it, and it works. Now, if there is a malicious prover, he can think of two things, okay? First, he can think, okay, I'm going to relay this same query, the same challenge to another party, but the problem is that the response he will receive is related to another identity. So he's not going to get paid. He's just going to be paying another party. If he wants to redo this encoding, the problem is that it takes a lot more than 1 second, okay? So in a sense, he cannot fake a proof. So to create this asymmetry, we need something I call practical asymmetric time encoders, or PATIs. So we have a program, which is an encoder. We have another program, which is a decoder for a certain Turing machine. And we define the steps that this program performs as the number of steps it requires to run for a random input until it halts. And we will ask that this steps function is mostly uniform. So we said that we have two programs, and we said that decoding, if I encode an input and I decode it, I get the same input. So we define the asymmetry ratio as the number of steps it takes to decode divided by the number of steps it takes to encode. So the desired properties at, of course, the program must be small, and if there is any other PATI that encodes the same mapping, then this function, this encoding must be relatively equally efficient, okay? And to guarantee this, we need to rely on some complexity assumptions or number theoretic assumptions to make sure that the encoding that we pick is one of the fastest encoding possible for that mapping. Also, we want, as I said, that decoding and encoding speeds will be practical for our application, and we want the highest possible asymmetry ratio, because that is going to protect us from the attacker trying to encode on the fly. Well, there is a function that has these properties. It's called the Polik-Hellman cipher, private key cipher. It's a very, very old, one of the first number theoretic encryption systems. It works like this. In this case, it's the opposite. Decryption would be like encoding. So to decode a value, we just raise it to the third power modulo of big prime and bit prime. And to encode it, we will raise it to a value u, which has approximately n bits, which is the inverse of the 3 modulus p minus 1. So we get this encoding decoding property. So using the standard square and multiply algorithm, encoding would take 1.5 times n multiplications, while decoding takes only 3 multiplications. So the asymmetry ratio here is n divided by 2. Okay, so we can make this asymmetry ratio as large as we want just by taking a prime, which is, you know, larger. So what are the practical parameters that we can choose that serve this purpose? Okay, I tested it in my laptop with a libgmp. So for n equals 2048, this is a little bit technical, but please follow me. Exponentiation takes 2.8 milliseconds, while 3 multiplication takes only 3.6 microseconds. So the theoretical asymmetry ratio is approximately 1,000. What I measure is approximately 7,077. So now think about the Bitcoin blockchain. Okay, so we get 1 megabyte block every 10 minutes, and it takes only 11 seconds to encode it. So it works perfectly for Bitcoin, and it works also perfectly for RSK and for Ethereum. And decoding is really fast. You get 71 megabytes per second. So that is not going to interfere with your node operations. If you want to get a higher asymmetry ratio, you can take n equal 20k, and you still are in the bones that you can still use for encoding your blockchain. So this is the one-time blockchain encoding step. You take your blockchain or your file, and you split it in n-bit chunks, and then you scramble each one with your node address. And this scrambling can be very simple, can be just XORing with a full domain hash of the node address, and then you encode it with your slow function. So this is what a typical proof of a storage looks like. You have some kind of memory bound problem, because you want to prove you have a lot of data, and you transform it into a disk I/O problem like this. You take a seed, the verifier will send you a seed, and from that seed you derive a number of positions in the file, and then you will just access those positions and build a hash, okay? Well, the problem with all these constructions is that they depend on this technology. So if I use SSD, then the parameters are completely different if I use a hard disk. And also, disk characteristics properties change all over time. So this is what we really do. We first do the step of encoding and creating this asymmetry. And then we receive from the verifier, in this case is the POOPS contract, the proof of unique blockchain storage contract, we receive a C0. With this C0, we will take some parts, we will derive some indexes, some parts of the blockchain or the file, and we will bring all these into RAM. Okay, so we are independent of the technology, the disk access technology. And this is the challenge response preparation phase. Now, we receive from the smart contract, like 20 seconds later, a second seed. Okay, seed one. And well, from seed one, we will derive these indexes of RAM, where we will take these small pieces, small blocks, and hash them. Okay, well, we have transformed this memory bound problem into a CP bound problem. Well, there is some important problem here that we cannot do this from a smart contract, is that the block interval can be about 10 seconds, 20 seconds. So the number K, the number of pieces we have to hash to prevent an attacker doing this encoding on the fly will be very, very high, okay? Like in the order of 20,000 or maybe more. So the proof that we get is very large, and the smart contract won't be able to, you know, with the gas limits to evaluate if it is correct or incorrect. So we changed the last part, and we transformed a CPU-bound problem into a memory bus I/O problem. And this has been done. This has been done in Parmacoin, for instance. The same procedure. So instead of taking a large number of blocks to hash, we take only 40. But we request that the hash that we obtain has proof of work. Okay. So we will try many times, like deriving new seeds from the seed one and a nonce. You know, try a lot of times, maybe 20 seconds or 10 seconds, until we'll get one that has this property of the proof of work. So this is how the whole protocol works, and it's very, very simple. So in the step zero, we have this one-time encoding, but we also have that full nodes will register with this POOPS smart contract. And this can be, they don't have to reveal their IP, they just have to register RSK or Ethereum address to be paid. Also, they will do some pre-deposit because they are going to be penalized if they present an invalid proof. So in step one, the POOPS contract will derive the seed zero from the block hash and will give the nodes enough time to bring all these pieces or a big piece into RAM. So in step three, the POOPS contract will derive a seed one. And now the competition begins that it's not a competition, it's cooperation, actually. But the full nodes will try to get this proof of work, will try to get from all proof candidates, we try to find one that matches, that has a whose hash is lower than the proof of work target. So they will submit these proofs to the blockchain in normal transaction. There will be plenty of time, like six blocks ahead to prevent censorship so that they can do that. And in step six, there is a deadline for this. And then an external challenge phase begins. In this phase, full nodes will try to see if the other nodes are cheating. So they will pick the nonce and the hash that has been commit from other full nodes and will reevaluate those proofs. But since there are only 40 elements, then it takes about 100 milliseconds. So they can just evaluate every other full node's commitment. If one of them finds that someone has cheated, then it just sends a fraud proof to the blockchain, to the POOPS smart contract, which is just the full expansion of this proof, which will show if the original commitment was correct or incorrect. So in step nine, there is a deadline for proof submission, for fraud proof submission, and then the rewards have been paid. of course, they are only going to be paid to the nodes that are behaved honestly. So because the reward is going to be shared, nodes, full nodes are also incentivized to detect cheaters. Now, what's the difference? I said before that this protocol can be used to prove any file, not just the blockchain. The blockchain is the easiest one because the node already has a copy of the blockchain, maybe, so it can more easily evaluate things. But it can be used to any file to create, you know, a file sharing system that you can reward node just to hold the data for you. And multiple copies. You can just create a contract that creates 100 copies of the same information. But there are some differences between the Filecoin's proof of replication and proof of unique file storage. Proof of replication depends on the success time. So it's difficult to tune for all kinds of disks. And it gives you typical asymmetries of about 10 to 100. So it's very easy that technology changes and then an attacker is able to fake proof. On the contrary, proof of unique file storage does not depend on access time and has typical asymmetries between 1,000 and 10,000. And also, you can combine them, so you get 10 times more. You can combine 10,000 of asymmetry ratio of proof of unique file storage and combine them with, you know, 10 times more for proof of replication. Well, the summary is that, well, decentralization is very, very important in these networks. And increasing or setting a full node reward, for the first time, we can incentivize the creation of new full nodes and keep the number of full nodes, even if we request them to store 10 times more information. And this proof of unique file storage and proof of unique blockchain storage allows you to prove that you have this unique copy of the file of the blockchain. And the important thing is this can be done right from a smart contract with almost no gas consumption. And also the proofs are very short. It's just a hash and a nonce. Okay, so this could be implemented in Ethereum or in ERSK tomorrow. Well, we are working on implementation. And so when we open source, you will be able to play with it. So thank you very much, and the organizers.